This is the best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network, brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting Adam to 21000.
All right, let's talk.
Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Adam Gold.
Oh, and we have the NBA draft today.
We have that as well.
We have the NBA draft today.
Yes. Who's in it?
I don't know.
Kate Cunningham. That's it.
Probably.
That's all I know.
Yeah. It's quite possibly the least talked about NBA draft in history. I'm not sure how many people are fired up about it. I really don't know. We'll talk to Brian Geisinger about it a little bit later on. All right. Hurricanes fans. You've been waiting for this. Yesterday was kind of a mixed bag for me. I mean, I'm not going to lie and say that it was a disaster, because I don't know that it was a disaster. I think there were things to like. There were things that we can't possibly know. And there were things to dislike about what happened yesterday. I'm going to go with the positive first, because I think the positive needs to be discussed. It started with a trade for me. Actually, there were some other things that were announced, but it starts to me with a trade. Warren Fogle for Ethan Bear. Warren Fogle, we've talked about Fogle before. I've written about Fogle several times. He's sort of a tease. He should be better than he is. His production has gone up, and his impact in the game has kind of waned over the last couple of years. He hasn't been a consistent player. He should be getting better, but I don't think he is. All of that stuff. Now, it's very possible that Fogle reaches his potential in Edmonton, and if that happens, he's going to be a good player. He's got all the tools. But he wasn't being that for Carolina. They needed a young right shot defenseman, offensive or defensive minded, almost didn't matter. They needed somebody in the system on the right side who could play. And I think Ethan Bear has a chance to be really good. So shouts to the Hurricanes for that trade, which is one of the best things that they did. They signed Ian Cole, a veteran left shot defenseman who will probably pair with Ethan Bear on the third pairing. And Cole is a defensive-minded guy, physical player, has some size. Like, wait, a good hockey move. I really think this is a good deal. And re-signing Jordan Martinook was tremendous. I've written about this a number of times. There'll be a story going up at WRALSportsFan.com in a little bit as I just kind of add some finishing touches to it. Jordan Martinook is part of the culture of this team. And they talk about culture and culture and culture and character and all that. And that's what Jordan Martinook is. He's leadership. He's character. He's all of that. He's a loud, sometimes too loud, voice in the room. And you need players like that to carry that out onto the ice, but also be that presence in the locker room. And I thought that re-signing Jordan Martinook was tremendous. 3 years, took a little bit of a haircut. $1.8 million per year. He made $2 million last year. So to me, those were three really good things about yesterday. The wait and see part. Are Frederik Andersen and Antti Raanta better than Alex Nedeljkovic and Peter Mrazek? We don't know the answer to that. We just don't. The one clear advantage Frederik Andersen has is that Andersen has been a bona fide starter and a Vezina candidate. You can't say that about Mrazek, and you can't say that about Nedeljkovic. Alex played 23 games last year, so he's still potential with Ned. And Mrazek, probably is best suited with a little bit of a fire under him as part of a tandem. But the Ned-Mrazek tandem could have been great for Carolina. Would have been slightly more expensive based on contract signed, but it could have been great. I don't know if Andersen and Raanta are upgrades. I could argue both sides of that. The one thing is, Anderson has been not only a starter, but a workhorse. Where 3 years in a row, before the season that shut down because of COVID, the shortened season, he averaged 64 starts the three previous years for Toronto. That's a lot. That's 64 starts is just short of three times what Alex Nedeljkovic started last year. So we don't know. We don't know the answer to that. The one thing I would say is that Ranta and Anderson don't have great playoff pedigree. In fact, Ned and Mrazek have combined for more series wins than Anderson and Ranta. Take, you know, assign whatever value you wish to that. Personally, and I said this, I would have kept Ned, especially at that number, and I would have tried to add Yaroslav Halak to back him up and maybe share the time. And I think Carolina would have been ultimately better off than what they have, but I could be absolutely wrong about this. Anderson could be a star behind Carolina's defense, and Ranta could be a really good backup. He's got some history where he has played at a high level. Now, to the WTF portion of what the Hurricanes did yesterday. And Tony DeAngelo is going to get all the headlines, and we're going to talk about DeAngelo here first. But I don't think it was the worst thing that happened to the Hurricanes yesterday. Tony DeAngelo, who has a long history of being a jackwagon. There's a lot of words we can use to say it, okay? I'm going to refrain from using any of those because until we get a chance to speak to him and know him and all of that, I just don't know how much of it is fair. But there is no question that he has had personality conflicts with teammates, with people, with coaches. And the Hurricanes, a few days after the New York Rangers bought him out, and less than a year after they sent him home, remember, he only played six games last year because the Rangers were done with him. He played six games. They signed him to a two-year contract worth about, I think the cap hit was $4.8 a year, so $9.6 million deal in 2 years. For 2 years, they got six games out of him. Bought him out. But here's why Carolina signed him. It's because he is a wonderful offensive player. They knew they weren't re-signing Dougie Hamilton. They knew it. Everything they said trying to sign him. Maybe they were trying to sign him. They did a poor job of that because that should have happened a long time ago if, in fact, they were serious about Dougie Hamilton. I don't believe they were really serious about Dougie Hamilton, and I'm not even disagreeing with it. But they had been working on DeAngelo for weeks, so they knew they weren't getting to the finish line with Dougie. And DeAngelo comes with a lot of baggage. And I remember, how many times did we hear Rod Brind'Amour say the number one thing about any player we bring in, the number one thing, what kind of person is he? Right? More important than the player, what kind of person is he? So the Carolina Hurricanes have officially compromised their values for a very good offensive player. If you don't think that comes with risk, you don't understand team dynamics. It comes with risks. Yes, they were not told to stay away by Brady Shea or Jesper Fast, who both played with DeAngelo in New York, and Mark Stahl is on the record, another former Ranger teammate, as being supportive of Tony DeAngelo. All of those things are true. But I wrote this Tuesday night. Players are loath to publicly slam somebody who might be sitting next to them in a locker room one day. They just don't want to say it in public. Players say a lot of things different in private. And I'm not suggesting that that is absolutely what's happened here. I'm just saying that, again, assign whatever meaning you wish to the public statements attributed to former Ranger teammates about Tony DeAngelo. It's a risk. Culture, Carolina's culture is very strong, and that's why it's a risk. All right, speaking of culture, and to me, we didn't even bring in the Don Waddell and Tony DeAngelo sound. We got to play it later. I'm sorry, but I don't want to run out of time. I think the worst thing that happened to Carolina yesterday was not signing Tony DeAngelo. As much as people are mad about it, and clearly I know people that have canceled season tickets based on that player signing. I know it. And it's not going to be just two or three. It's probably going to be in the neighborhood of 100. I don't know what kind of impact that has. The biggest problem for the Hurricanes was letting Brock McGinn walk away for $2.75 million a year. That is the contract that should have kept Brock McGinn in Carolina, not allowed him to walk away to a division foe. You're going to have to deal with Brock McGinn four times a year in Pittsburgh. Four times a year. That dude's going to block a shot on a power play. That dude's going to set up a shorthanded scoring chance. He is going to be a pain in their ass for 4 years. And he should have been a Hurricane at that number. 2.75 ain't outrageous for Brock McGinn. I don't even know if it's high. It's certainly not outrageous. He made 2.3 last year. That's not outrageous for Brock McGinn. He's not just a fourth-line player for those people who just simply want to look at a spreadsheet. I mean, I don't have to point out to you how many times Brock McGinn played in the top six on this team. Not on a steady basis, but when they needed him to inject some energy and a different look into the top six, hey, Brock, go up and get some work done. Happened in the playoffs this year. Brock McGinn scored 3 goals against Nashville. That series was a lot harder than it needed to be. Brock McGinn needed to play well. He did. Double overtime in Washington, April of 2019. Who's playing on a top line with Sebastian Aho and Justin Williams in Game 7? Huh, Brock McGinn. He's not a fourth liner. That was a contract that should have kept Brock McGinn here. So, mixed bag. There was some good, there was some bad, and there was some we don't know yet. And there's also more to come. They got about $14 million under the cap, and there's more for them to do. We'll talk more about the Hurricanes later on. I got that off my chest. All right. Somehow we're going to avoid talking about the Olympics in this segment, Alec. We're going to avoid talking about the Olympics in this segment because I've got about 3 more minutes here, and we need to ask this question. What's college sports going to look like in 4 years?
I don't know, but I'm excited for it.
Well, in a way, I am too. And by the way, shouts to all of the state fans who said, let's go to the SEC.
Yeah, you don't want that action.
Dude. No, because they might. Yeah. And I'm going to use an example.
I think they do want it. I'm telling them they don't want it.
Right. But I'm going to use an example of a former ACC member. If you would like to be the next University of Maryland and you would like to go into a new conference where you are completely invisible and have zero ties to any of your fellow conference members, all for the paycheck, then that's it. Then I invite you to do that. That's what Maryland's lot in college life is now, as a member without any rivalries, any influence, any impact on their league. Zero. You know how sometimes you'll go and you'll list all the conference, you're just writing down all the members in your conference? I guarantee you people forget that Maryland's in the Big Ten. Big Ten fans are like, who are we missing? Who are we missing? Who do we, is Rutgers in? Oh, that's right. Maryland's in the conference. How many people do that with Louisville today, by the way, in the ACC. Anyway, college sports is going to be fundamentally different within 4 years. I don't know if Oklahoma and Texas joining the SEC, I mean, I can't tell you it's good for college football, good for college sports. I personally think it's terrible for college sports. It's great for the SEC. It really is. Well, I shouldn't say it's great for the SEC. It can't be good for Arkansas, yet they're going to vote for it. It can't be good for either of the Mississippi schools, yet they're going to vote for it. I don't even think it's good for LSU, yet they're going to vote for it because it's going to mean more money. It's going to. It's going to mean probably anywhere from $10 to $20 million more per year. And that's what it's about. It ain't about, I don't even understand why Texas wants it. Texas can't even dominate the Big 12. Good luck, man. Steve Sarkisian and your football program, good luck in a much more difficult neighborhood. I don't get it. I don't understand why Texas wants it. Not like Texas needs anybody's money. Texas is arguably the wealthiest athletic department in the entire country. But that's where we're headed. Texas and Oklahoma basically giving the middle finger to the other eight members of the Big 12. Whatever. It's business. Nothing personal, just business. The who is the president of Oklahoma State? I don't understand how the governor of Oklahoma is like, hey, what are you doing to Oklahoma State? That conference is going to die. The Big 12 is going to die. And quickly, how will the ACC react? We're going to talk about this a little bit later on with Andy Staples. And to me, the question tells you the problem is that the ACC is left in reaction mode. It's unfortunate. Look, I don't know if the ACC had anything to offer Texas. I really don't. I don't know if they were asleep at the switch. I don't. But it's certainly not good for the ACC, which is struggling to get to a $30 million annual payout to all of its member institutions and is severely behind in finances from the Big Ten and the SEC, who, by the way, because they had so much money, they just cut a check to all of their member schools after this past year. Yeah, we got all this money. So they just gave everybody, I don't know what the number is, $10 million. Probably a little bit more, but regardless. They just cut a check to every school because they are awash in cash. The Big Ten can do the same thing. ACC can't do that. So they'll probably end up 5 years from now about $40 million behind each year. At some point, that matters. At some point. I'm sure Florida State looks down the street at University of Florida and goes, why are you making so much more money than we are? Well, they're not very good, obviously. Florida State, good in basketball. It's a good basketball school, good men's golf school, good women's soccer school. Not a very good football school right now. Football pays all the bills. It's going to be hard. We'll see how the ACC reacts to that. Trip Tracy, the voice of the Carolina Hurricanes, the analyst on TV and radio, joins us now on the Adam Gold Show. My friend Tripp, I hope that you have had a good summer so far.
I have, Adam. I was just talking to our dear friend Alec Campbell offline that thankfully I hope it continues. I've gone from being dwarf on golf to, hitting a few good shots. So that's a nice progression I hope continues.
Yeah, there's Dorf had a video. Just remember that. Tim Conway did put out videos, Dorf on Golf. All right, let's get to, I want to start with the good. And you and I actually texted a little bit yesterday about this, so I don't know if you agree or not, but to me the good was I loved the trade Warren Fogle to Edmonton for Ethan Bear, young right shot defenseman, I think with some upside with 1 year left on a contract. I really liked bringing back Jordan Martinook, and we could talk more about him. And I like the addition of Ian Cole. I think those three things were, to me, the best things that Carolina did. What do you think about them?
I agree with you. I think Ethan Bear is a I don't know if I'd go so far as to say an underrated defenseman, but a defenseman that is just starting to catch his sea legs. I think that that could be a trade, ideally, that could benefit both teams.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Donnie Waddell and Ken Holland go way back to their Detroit days. And, you know, if Warren at times, he was an outstanding professional. He played the game systematically well. I worried about his ability to elevate his game during the playoffs. Ethan Bear, I think, gives you a guy just scratching the surface on defense. I do think with the addition of Bear, Cole, and D'Angelo, when you look at Carolina 1-6, they're without question a better team or deeper team on the blue line than they were for the most part last year. I think they're still in the hunt for a seventh defenseman, and most importantly, a forward to replace the one guy I didn't want to see go, and that's Brock McGinn.
I'm sure
you'll get to him in a second.
Yeah, we will. I do. First of all, if their third defensive pairing is Ian Cole and Ethan Bear,
yeah,
I mean, that's a pretty good third pairing. Cole's played some big minutes before. He's never averaged over 20 minutes, but he's played 96 career playoff games. And I think when I look at, you know, he's a physical player. He plays the left side. They needed another left guy who could play because I don't know what it means for Jake Gardner. I don't know what any of this means for Jake Gardner. I don't know if he's going to be part of the mix next year, if he's going to be healthy enough to play. I don't know. I think they're trying to figure out a way to move on from Jake Gardner. I know that they're trying to move on some way from Jake Gardner. I just don't know if they're going to be willing to bite the bullet in terms of a buyout. So I love Cole. And look, Fogle to me is a guy who, if he puts it together and learns how to play with a mean streak, Edmonton's going to have a really good player for a long time. So I wish him well. Warren, I don't think his impact on the game progressed as well as his production in terms of points. Let me get to the goaltending with you.
Yep.
Because you know goaltending way better than I do. I don't know if what Carolina did is better than what they had. I don't know if Frederik Andersen and Antti Raanta are better than the combination of Alex Nedeljkovic and Peter Mrazek. But tell me why you think it might be.
Well, I want to preface it by saying that I'm a believer. I always have been. An advocate in Alex Nedeljkovic's ability.
Yeah,
I think he can be a one. And that's a lot for me to say because as a guy, not just dwarf on golf, but waiting for my growth spurt was one of the reasons that fast-tracked me to the booth. I like size. With that being said, I was and I am very bullish on the upside of Alex Nedeljkovic. My belief is that the number that he would have settled for in Carolina was a higher number than what he settled for in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
I just recently found that out. Peter Mrazek, it's no secret he and I have become very close personally.
Yeah.
He either reestablished or in earnest established his game in Carolina and created a connection with the fans that was outstanding. I do think that moving on for him, for both parties, I think is best suited for both Peter and for the Hurricanes. But I have tremendous gratitude of being his analyst, and there are countless great moments, and he's a super person and will be a lifelong friend. James Reimer was a dumped salary and was an excellent Hurricane.
Mm-hmm.
I know at times maybe there were leaky goals, but what did he do? He just found ways to win. So those are three goaltenders that Alex and Peter and James, that all made significant impacts for Carolina. What I see now, and I preface this by saying that I believe in the upside of what Nedeljkovic can be. Frederik Andersen will benefit being out of Toronto. I just mentioned how much I like size. He's significantly bigger. I think that he will also benefit from the fact that the Hurricanes play more of a rigid, systematic, structured game than the Maple Leafs do.
Mm-hmm.
The question will be, will he be a gamer come playoff time? Antti Raanta, when he's been healthy, and you and I both know that has been the profound question, this guy has challenged to be an upper echelon goaltender. I would think that he has hopefully learned some things about how to give himself the best chance at good health. He will be invigorated, I'm sure, with Sebastian Aho and Teuvo Teravainen.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it is a pairing that has as much or more upside, two veteran guys that you can really almost count on what you're going to get from, other than the questions of Ranta's health and what Anderson will do in the playoffs, because, of course, that's the expectation, that it's a veteran pairing that has as much or more upside than the Hurricanes have had in recent memory.
Trip Tracy, Hurricanes analyst, is joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. Like, I really don't know, and I'm in the piece I'm about to publish, I think it's a fair question that, you know, how much of Anderson's numbers versus Nedeljkovic and Mrazek's numbers are based on the system. It's possible that Carolina's system makes it easier on goaltenders, certainly than Toronto's. They have been a mess defensively for a long time. All right, now to the stuff that I didn't like. And I will probably be different from most people that Tony DeAngelo's signing wasn't the worst thing about yesterday for me, and I think you know where I'm going to end up here. But let's deal with DeAngelo first. To me, whenever I have talked to Rod, it's always been the first thing, the first box they check is the person before the player. And the player, DeAngelo, might be really good offensively. I mean, he is very good offensively. He's not good defensively, but maybe that'll change over time. But, man, I just see no matter what the number is, no matter how long the deal is, it's just a risk to your culture whenever you enter into a situation, a relationship with somebody who has not displayed any character over the course of their career. So that's my fear there.
I would, you know, because this is one that, you know, requires some extensive conversation. And since you and I spoke yesterday, you know, as you would expect from me, I've done some digging, mm-hmm. both with the Hurricanes, and I've spoken to four of his, of Tony's. I talked to Tony briefly, and a couple of his Hurricanes teammates who also played with him in New York, and a couple of his Rangers teammates, one that has moved on to Detroit,
mm-hmm.
Who I hold as citizens in the highest, and I mean Mount Everest, regard. Now, this is only speaking about the type of teammate he was, but AG, I will just read a couple of their responses. I'll keep their names anonymous. I think you can draw a decent conclusion about who these, I mean, these are extremely highly thought of players and mm-hmm. people, more importantly. Yeah, he was a great teammate, was nothing but good to me, and definitely consider him a good friend. Yeah, he's a good guy. He's gotten a bad rap. Just emotional on the ice. Trip, you will like him. And the final one was, I don't think the media's portrayal, while the mistakes he's made are very, very, very significant and require infinite conversation, I think, again, Trip, you will like him. Now, that's just from the teammate side of things. You know, I doubt we even have time to get into the mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
no, everybody knows him pretty much. I mean, people have... the angry people know the mistakes.
Yeah. I agree with you. I just, you know, when I look at it, and it's going to require more extensive research for me, you have a extremely significant ethnic slur in junior.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? There is no time, there's no place, there's nothing for that, even with all the conversation that goes on the ice. Doesn't excuse it, flat out inexcusable. He owned it. In terms of berating officials, it's something that when I get to Michigan, I think about how I need to be a lot cool under pressure when I get upset about the officiating in the NHL. The political, you know, he decided to back enthusiastically the most divisive president in United States history. What I'm saying is it requires countless more conversation, AG, but I think it's fair to say that ultimately we might decide, like it seems like his teammates have decided, that the mistakes he's made are not as extreme as they have been portrayed.
All right, final thing, and by the way, for me, even though I clearly don't share Tony's politics,
And for what it's worth, neither do I.
Right, but all I'm saying is, I mean, I would say 85% of the league probably is in a similar political leanings as Tony D'Angelo. That's fine. I don't care. I don't even care about the combative nature he has gone about it on social media. Now, to me, the worst thing that happened yesterday.
Quickly, though, Adam, sure. What I would say, because for me, I've always been nonpartisan. I try to keep it out of. I remember when my cousin, who you mentioned, Jim Farley,
right.
He was walking with our current president, Joe Biden, and I posted on Instagram a couple of months ago, and I got criticized by all the Republican Hurricanes fans when all it was a proud moment for my family. It's just proud to be an American, proud for my family. The one thing I would say before you move on to, I think, our mutual disappointment that things will not continue for Brock McGinn as a Hurricane, I did just want to say it's no secret that I think that Dougie Hamilton is one of the most genuine, caring guys you mm-hmm. will ever meet. But when I look at the kingpins on the blue line and the best defensive yep. guys that you need in the playoffs, in no particular order, it's Slavin, Pesci, Shea, and then Hamilton falls in somewhere after that, there's just no way. That would have been a franchise-crippling contract. I wish Dougie the absolute best. But when you mentioned D'Angelo, I think D'Angelo, just as a player, has a chance to come in on the ice. He can behave himself, and he can make a definite yep. impact and actually fill Dougie's shoes.
All right, final thing. We got about 2 minutes okay. left, and we probably should have left more than 2 minutes for this. I think four times $2.75 million for Brock McGinn, to me, was a contract to keep, not to lose. McGinn, who means so much more to the culture of this team than a normal fourth-line player. I think it was the worst thing that I saw yesterday. One, and I'll just say, high-ranking Hurricanes official, who I communicated with, said he's sick about losing McGinn.
I will tell you, in my 23 years, I hate to play favorites. It's like calling people best friends.
Right.
But I've never made any secret about it from the day Scotty Walker called me and said, "What do you get a load of this guy, Brock McGinn," having coached him in juniors,
mm-hmm.
to his first game right down the road from where I am in Detroit, where he hit the ground running. Last-minute call-up playing with Eric Staal and Chris Versteeg, to the fact that he played through anything, to, of course, his biggest triumph in Washington Game 7, to the way that he responded to that drama in the Boston series, in the bubble. And just some guys talk about being team-first guys. Brock McGinn epitomizes it. It was a situation where I think there's a chance that the communication broke down at the last minute. It's a very sad day for me because Brock McGinn, if I could pick any guy to keep, it would have been Brock McGinn. And I wish him the best in Pittsburgh. And I always hoped that he'd be a guy that would be a drafted, developed, and always a Hurricane.
Me too. I think he's also part of the culture that Rod Brindamore, along with Justin Williams, engineered a turnaround 3.5 years ago. Tripp Tracy, I appreciate your time as always. Good luck separating yourself from Dorf on golf. Best to your mom, and we will talk to you very soon.
AG, I love you, and let's just hope that my putting stroke won't continue to be referred to as staccato.
Andy Staples from The Athletic. Covers college football as well or better than any human being alive. Joins us, probably knows the best barbecue in every SEC city in the country. I thank you very much for your time, Mr. Staples. How you doing?
I'm doing good.
I'm glad. Is this big picture on this? Because I've had a lot of people tell me it's great for college sports. Would a move like this be great, or even just college football? Let's just narrow it to that. Would this particular move be good for college football or not?
Depends on who you are. If you're a fan of one of these teams or a fan of an SEC school and you're a fan of getting better games than you got before, then absolutely. If you are a fan of one of the teams left in the Big 12, no, you think it's pretty terrible. So it's one of those all politics or local deals.
Does the Big 12 survive the loss of Texas and Oklahoma?
Not as a power conference. I mean, it can be a conference still. The remaining eight could pick up some other schools and and then go on, but they won't make the kind of money they made when they had Texas and Oklahoma with them. So they got to figure out what they want to do. And meanwhile, the American knows either we try to take them,
right,
or they take the best of us. And you guys in ACC country understand the whole eat or be eaten thing. At one point,
yep,
the ACC and the Big East were peers, and then only one of them was going to survive.
I remember having a conversation. Andy Staples from The Athletic is joining us. I had this conversation, I swear, with Mike Trangisi, then the commissioner of the Big East, back in 2000, where he recognized all the way back then that with a bunch of universities with differing ideals, some have played football and some didn't, he knew what the future was, and he didn't love it. But he knew what football was, how football was becoming. I mean, 2000 doesn't seem that far, that long ago. He knew that his conference was in somewhat of peril, to say.
Well, that's pretty much his fault, because Penn State wanted to join, and they're like, eh, now we're good. So, I mean, he knew what was coming, but he didn't do anything about it.
Right. Yeah, but I'm not even sure. They still would have had, you know, the Villanovas and Georgetowns and St. John's. They still would have had just a wide disparity of, you know, of agendas as teams.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know if the ultimate, if we wouldn't have been here anyway with, and the ACC, John Swafford is right. He expanded because he understood that football was going to drive everything, and they needed to make sure that they were part of the conversation going forward, and they wouldn't have been at all. And they probably would have lost the Florida States and Clemsons of the world if they didn't go on and expand to what ultimately was Miami, Boston College, and Virginia Tech. Syracuse was supposed to be part of that. In talking about this, and we were at ACC kickoff on Wednesday of last week, and we had these conversations, and the conversation immediately goes to, hey, Jim Phillips, commissioner of the ACC, what do you do now? I guess my issue with the ACC has always been reacting, except from that moment when John Swafford made, I guess, the first move. What does the ACC do now?
I don't know, because it kind of depends on that grant of rights. I mean, they have a grant of rights through 2036, so theoretically that protects them from getting picked apart. I mean, nobody's going to take Clemson or North Carolina or anybody right. like that, or even attempt to, if their rights are tied up through 2036. So if that thing holds, they don't have to worry about getting picked apart. They just have to worry about the same thing they were worried about before, which is the revenue gap between them
right.
and the Big Ten and in the SEC. And so, I mean, I'm sure Jim Phillips, his first day on the job, sat down at his desk and there was a card on it saying, welcome. And you open it and says, now go get Notre Dame.
Right.
And that's not going to happen, though. I mean, if the 12-team playoff that has been proposed happens, there's no incentive for Notre Dame to join a conference in football. So it's just, I mean, it's a bit of a pipe dream at this point, unless this movement changes what the playoff is going to be and incentivizes Notre Dame to join a conference. But at the moment, they have less incentive.
Well, here's my point is that I don't know that it changes anything about Notre Dame 12-team playoff or 4-team playoff. But I do think, and I've been saying this for a long time, I think the future of college football is that the Power Five, calling it the Power Five
power
is probably silly. But
two and a half.
Power, right. I think the future of the sport is in a complete breakaway from the rest of the NCAA, probably bringing in more teams to maybe get up to maybe the number is 80.
Your number is about twice too high.
You think it becomes less?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, then Notre Dame is part of that, and we have a completely different animal. Maybe we don't have any conferences at that point, or maybe we're all in the Southeastern Conference.
That is what we theorized in a story today, that perhaps this is the first step toward a Super League under the SEC banner, which wouldn't be an immediate thing. That would be, you know, 20 years from now. But it is going to change. The governance of the sport is going to change. The NCAA is going to shrink back. And Mark Emmert said it himself the other day, that perhaps each sport needs to be governed individually.
Hmm.
And if you have that, then, and the SEC keeps scooping up the best teams every time it gets a chance, well, eventually, that's the Premier League.
Is that sustainable financially?
I mean, people like to watch good football teams play, so I'd say that's probably the most sustainable financial model.
Right. Well, no, they like to watch good football teams, but this is something that I have wondered. Why does Arkansas want that, other than for the paycheck, which I totally understand?
For the paycheck.
Right. No, the paycheck is enormous. I get it. But competitively speaking, and I understand that we're probably not even talking about, like, why did Maryland want to go to the Big Ten? It wasn't because it was going to make them better. It just made them.
We'll talk about English Premier League. Why does a team fight to be number 17 so they can stay in the Premier League?
Right.
They don't stand a chance of winning a title, but they don't want to get relegated. So if you can not be relegated, that's great. Like, I had a South Carolina fan write into my mailbag the other day and said, what's in this for the fans? I'm like, well, you guys can petition your president to withdraw from the SEC anytime. You can go join the Sun Belt if you want to win. Although, you got to be Coastal and Appalachian State. Not really. Might be
right.
Tough right now. But I mean, if that's the goal, then do it. Nothing, especially the SEC schools, nothing is stopping them.
Well,
they have no exit fee.
Is it a fair response to that? To say, well, one is professional sports and the other is college sports?
Not really. I mean, college sports have been run like professional sports since 1984. The players are now getting to enjoy some of that.
Yeah, that's another thing altogether. I love what the players are being able to finally take advantage of.
Well, I mean, we just saw it today. The Suni Lee, who just won the gold medal in the all-around in gymnastics, she's an Auburn commit.
Mm-hmm.
Before she, like, if this Olympics had happened on time, she'd have never set foot on Auburn's campus.
Right.
Because she can't be on the Wheaties box and can't do all that stuff.
Yep.
Now she can.
Yeah, I've been saying that about Katie Ledecky.
That too?
How much money did Katie Ledecky cost herself swimming for Stanford and pushing away all of the Speedos of the world, cost herself millions of dollars. I'm sure you're familiar with this because I'm pretty sure I saw this in The Athletic. There was a chart not that long ago, and Andy Staples is joining us, this was when Cole Anthony was playing basketball at North Carolina, so this is a couple of years ago, the 20 most visible in terms of social media college athletes, and four of the top 10 were gymnasts at UCLA.
I believe LSU has a gymnast right now who's in the millions.
Yeah,
in terms of visibility.
Right, and the basketball players, the two girls who play basketball at Fresno State.
Fresno State. Yeah.
Do the Texas and the Oklahomas? And I don't. First of all, it's going to pass. We all understand it's going to pass. Do they owe the sport of college football anything?
No. It's their school. Their team, they can do what they want with it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't – I think there's a – isn't there a – there's nothing moral about this.
Eight programs for the last – when did the Big 12 start? 1996?
Yeah.
So for 25 years, they've been floating those other programs.
They have been.
So they could say, you're welcome, I suppose.
They could. No, look, and Bob Bowlesby tried a bunch of things – They initially gave A&M, Texas, and Oklahoma some money to stay.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't work.
Which is what caused everybody else to want to leave.
Right, but they all understand that nobody's knocking down Iowa State's door saying, please join our conference. Are there any of those schools with soft landings? Does Kansas have a soft landing in the Big Ten?
I don't think so. I mean, what – would adding Kansas make anybody in the Big Ten any more money? Or would you have to take a pay cut?
You might have to take a pay cut.
Yeah, then the answer is no.
Yeah, it all
Northwestern, why would I want to take a pay cut?
The only thing that matters, and I think basketball to an extent matters to the Big Ten network, is that Kansas is one of the top five basketball draws on television, but nobody's making decisions for basketball. Even the ACC wouldn't make decisions for basketball. Everybody's trying to add.
If I'm the American, I kind of would want that, because the American, maybe Houston could win a national title. Maybe Cincinnati can win a national title in basketball. Maybe Wichita State can. But Kansas definitely can. And you can have a Kansas-Wichita State rivalry, and that would be really fun. But, you know, that's the ACC and the Big Ten already have schools that can win the national title in basketball.
Right. That is absolutely true. But the SEC has schools that can win the national championship in football. Although they're only adding one of those.
Football's what pays for 85% of everything. So that, yes, it doesn't matter if you already have schools that can win the national championship in football. If you can get somebody who will make you more money, you take them.
Is this a be careful what you wish for Texas? I know you're going to make so much more money in the SEC, no. But it's not like you're just knocking everybody over in the Big 12.
What would you rather do, not win the Big 12 and make less money, or not win the SEC and make more money?
Right, but it was sort of a joke, but, the fact is...
That's the thing. There's no be careful what you wish for. You can be mediocre there or mediocre in this other place, but being mediocre in this other place gives you more money and more security and more everything else. So there's no debate.
Is the Super League going to pay players?
Oh, I would think so.
Like, no, I'm not talking about NIL. I'm talking about paying players.
Maybe. If that differentiates it from the other leagues.
Yeah, I think that's the way to do it.
The best players.
I think that's the way to do it. You become a full-fledged minor league for the NFL, which, if that's what it becomes, that's what it becomes. It's going to be interesting to see what happens to the schools that are not part of this.
Here's the thing. They're not going to stop playing. You know, I have a bunch of Kansas State fans mad at me today because they think I'm taking some sort of glee in this. They're not going to stop playing football at Kansas State. People are still going to love their school, and they're still going to come watch the team play. They just won't be playing with as much money as they played with before. That's the difference. You're still going to play against teams, and you're still going to make money. That's the thing. It's not like these guys just die or dissolve the program. They're still going to make enough to have a seven-figure head coach, to have nice locker rooms, nice uniforms, nice stadium. It's just not going to be up there with Texas and Oklahoma anymore.
But they're not with Texas and Oklahoma now. But these schools don't make any money, which of course is an eye roll.
Oh, they don't? have you ever been to Kansas State's football facility?
Right. Exactly.
Pretty nice building. do they pay for it with like a barter system?
Yeah, it's all Bitcoin.
They paid with pigs. that's the thing is. They cry poor, but they've been making millions. They just had to spend it all because they couldn't give it to the players. So I don't have the most sympathy for any of these guys. You know, you had tons of money. If you didn't build your brand to the point where you're in a position to get picked up by somebody else, that's your fault.
Andy Staples from The Athletic. I appreciate your time, my friend. Good chatting. It is a new world that those of us, I think you could tell, I'm on the other side of this. I don't think it's great for the college football.
I don't think it's great either. I just accept reality on reality's terms.
Yeah. I'm there with you. I don't think this is great for college football. I think it's great for the schools that will be a part of it. But I don't think it's great for college football at all. We have entered into a post-pandemic age where everybody is going to try and simply make the most money possible, which is something you and I should do.
That's something everybody should do.
Try to make the most money possible.
Kind of what the economy here is based on. So let's all try to do that.
Andy, thank you so much, man.
All right, thank you.
You've been listening to the best of the Adam Gold Show podcast. Part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network, brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting Adam to 21000. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 3 p.m. Or you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app, or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.